But your job in politics is to, it's to take the other side's money, demoralize them. I mean, it's more of an attacking war type thing.
Marcy, you know that there are a lot of legal fights out there that the other side is bringing against the pro-life movement, the pregnancy centers, other pro-life groups. The fight is nonstop, but there is at least one organization. There are a couple, but there is one really, really good organization that is sort of fighting back, and we're going to talk to them today on Dear Jane.
Yep, the Thomas More Society does a fabulous job standing up for pro-life organizations, large and small, whether they can afford it or not. Their model is really cool. Most of the time you think about lawfare and lawsuits and legal fees and attorney fees, and it's so expensive. They offer their services pro bono to their clients because they believe so much in the pro-life cause, and they are all pro-life. So we're going to talk with one of their guys today. Really fascinating to hear about all of the different types of fights that have been going on since the Dobbs decision overturned Roe v. Wade. And just to me, it kind of shows the desperation of the other side that they feel threatened by the pro-life movement. So that's a good thing. That's a positive. But yeah, there's just a lot to
One of the things Peter Breen's going to talk about is, and I love this, is how the other side has they have assumed or gotten used to, well, we're going to sue the pro-life people and they're just going to roll over and take it. Mm-hmm. And now they're learning, no, you better get ready because there's going to be a fight. Before we get to Peter, did you know that over 90% of our listeners have not yet clicked subscribe or follow on their platform of choice? How crazy is that?
What? That's crazy. Okay, speaking of things you can do to help the pro-life movement, you don't even have to hire lawyers for this one. It's real easy. If you hit subscribe, follow, check us out on social media, follow us there. That really does help us combat the often left-leaning big media, big tech behind all these social media and other platform algorithms. So it really does help get the pro-life message out there, which is what we're trying to do by featuring different guests here on Dear Jane. So if you are one of those in the 90% who listen but don't subscribe, take a second. It only takes a second to hit subscribe wherever you're listening. If you're one of the 10%, bravo. Thank you. Thank you for playing a part in helping spread.
Peter Breen's the Executive Vice President and Head of Litigation with the Thomas More Society. He visits us today on Dear Jane. Peter Breen from Thomas More Society joining us here today. And Peter, you've got your hands full with just defending pro-life interests across the country. Just to start, give us a feel for just how, I do want to say, how bad is it for pro-life groups out there in terms of being legally persecuted?
Well, I'll tell you, in the wake of Dobbs, certainly things are better for life in certain parts of the country. In other parts of the country, they are much worse for life because of the overreaction of pro-abortion politicians to to the pro-life spirit that was unleashed, I guess you could say, by the Supreme Court's decision and our ability to do some work. When I was in the legislature in Springfield, Illinois, I remember we one time we had a bill come up and they said, well, we're passing this bill to add more abortion because of what Alabama did. And you're sitting there going, who cares in the state of Illinois what the folks in Alabama are doing? But that's what the other side has been doing. And we saw it, I've been at this since 2007 or so, when President Obama came into office, every petty bureaucrat top to bottom started to come after pro-lifers. Now, we got President Trump elected in 2016. And I'll tell you that, the backlash in a variety of ways was bad, but especially in the area of life. And now with his reelection in 2024, we're seeing it again. So we've got cases against, these attorneys general in New York, California, the two biggest, worst pro-abortion states in the country, at a variety of other places. So that it's not great, but again, you do want to look at the good things, which is we are advancing for life in some very large states like Texas and Florida and others across the Southeast, in the Plains. And so there are a lot of bright spots, But there is a lot of, you know, there are a lot more trouble in certain areas as well.
What types of cases are you seeing come up against pro-life groups in those kind of trouble, problematic areas in the country?
Well, our bread and butter from the beginning, we were founded to defend against the National Organization for Women and the Southern Poverty Law Center, which were suing pro-life activists who were headquartered here in Chicago. And so our heart, our founding was really to defend the pro-life movement and especially the folks that are out there, you know, really doing the blocking and tackling, the work, you know, the everyday work of the pro-life movement. And so for them, really, the challenge is, it's the same as it was pre-Dobbs, except now worse, because you've got an energized opposition. I mean, you will see a lot more vigor and violence and, you know, I mean, just the temperature's really been taken up by the other side. I mean, we're seeing left-wing violence across the country, but in the area of life, you know, we get hit with it and you know, it doesn't end up on the evening news, but it's the sort of thing we're dealing with on a regular basis. And then you get these, you know, these municipalities and counties. So, you know, we had a case against City of Minneapolis that recently concluded, and they just, you know, they flagrantly violate the First Amendment rights of our folks. Tell them you can't protest on the driveway apron in front of the Planned Parenthood. You can go anywhere else in the city. You can burn the thing down. But no, if you protest in front of Planned Parenthood, then we're going to arrest you. You know, the other side will just, they will push and push in that sort of way. So there's plenty for us to do, you know, at least to the state and local level as well. So I would say this, you know, we've had a wonderful thing in getting the federal government out of our way to some extent. It's not, you know, we don't have as many pro-life things happening, but at least we're getting the anti-life out of the way. So you're getting a lot of the prosecutions and some of the various investigations and things are being pulled back, which is good. But again, state and local level, it is, you know, more energized on the other side than ever.
For those of us who aren't legal scholars, I'm not a legal scholar. I've watched a few episodes of Suits, but you know, in what areas of law are the other side attacking us? Is it speech, commerce? I mean, help us understand where they're coming at us.
Sure. I'll say this. The thing that I think has changed on the other side is, so for a while, they were just trying to expand abortion in their own states. So they're trying to get everything funded, make everything legal, you know, from the moment of conception to the moment, you know, or during birth, now after birth to a little bit, you know, all of that. You know, they want abortion pills on their college campuses. They want it everywhere. And once they ran out of things to do, they've now started to attack. And the place that I see the other side attacking, which is, I think, to some extent new, is pregnancy centers. Mm-hmm. They have, when you look at our side, I mean, we've changed as a movement. You know, it used to be there was a county right to life. Every church had a right to life group. You know, and we were more organized, maybe even, I don't want to say maybe by political, I don't know if it was political or political jurisdictions. You know, you had your county, town, state, et cetera. And there's less focus on that nowadays and more focus on the pregnancy centers. And when you look at them, there are 3,000 pregnancy centers across the country. So they've become the hub, oftentimes, of pro-life organizing activity in a community. So the other side has seen this, and they're really striking directly at the pro-life pregnancy centers. So what right now, big cases we've been involved in involve deceptive practices laws, so false advertising type laws. And those are perfectly you know, benign laws. You know, if you sell me a 15-ounce Coca, or you sell me a 16-ounce Coca-Cola, it's only got 15 ounces, yeah, you can sue for that. You know, that's a grave injustice that's been done to you and to thousands of others. So you can use those laws. You know, if somebody, you know, they sell you a lemon car and they've been doing it for everybody, well, okay, there's a deceptive practice, something like that. But what is unique here is the deceptive practices laws also, they apply usually without any regard to the First Amendment. And so what you're getting is this, in the area of abortion, I mean, this is the most contentious social issue of our time, consistently. You know, the trans stuff comes up, it goes down. But right for the last 50 years, it's been abortion. And in those areas, you are not supposed to be able to regulate speech. The government is supposed to be hands-off. Government's very restricted. Well, these deceptive practices laws are the other side's way around it. Because they say, well, your speech is false. And you go, well, what do you mean? So, for instance, in Illinois, they passed a law in 2023 that said that pro-life speech was misinformation. It was the Illinois General Assembly where I had served. And they said that, your claims that if you don't disclose to people that abortion is safer than childbirth, you have engaged in a deceptive practice. Now, first off, that's utterly false. So in other words, if I don't tell a falsehood to the women that come to see me, I'm violating the law. But true or false, the government has no right to declare that in an area so controversial as the issue of abortion. And so we've sued over that law, we won it. But now in California and in New York and elsewhere, they're attacking our pregnancy centers and Heartbeat International, our client. They're the biggest national network. They're suing because our folks will advertise to the public that, hey, if you've taken, for instance, the first pill of the two-pill abortion regimen, you could take progesterone and it might reverse it. Mm-hmm. Call it abortion pill reversal. That's been a big thing we've been promoting lately. Well, first off, we've got thousands of babies born. So, I mean, you can look at the evidence. You don't have to go to the scientific studies, but there are scientific studies. The biology checks out. I'm not a doctor, but I use their reports and present them as witnesses. And so all of this works, and the other side really has nothing on their side, but they will drag our clients into court. They will tie us up for years in litigation, and we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees, probably be in the millions by the end of these cases, and cause all this trouble, again, by misusing laws like this. But again, that's if I had to talk about where is the biggest attack from the other side right now, it's using these other laws that might have particularly good purposes, but trying to direct them at us.
Yeah, we saw that in Colorado. I lived there for the last 12 years, just recently moved, but we had a piece of legislation that heavily regulated what pregnancy centers were able to say, but also banned abortion pill reversal. And it was exactly what you're saying. We had already legalized abortion up through birth. Now what's next? Well, let's go after the pregnancy centers. Are there things that pregnancy centers or maybe other pro-life organizations that are affected by these types of legislative issues and new laws being passed? Are there things they can do to help prepare for that or mitigate it in some way?
Well, and maybe it may go without saying, but I always say it. If you're a pregnancy center or any sort of ministry, follow your best practices manuals. If you do what Heartbeat International and NIFLA and CareNet, whichever one you're a part of or ones you're a part of, you just do what they tell you to do, you're going to be okay. I started pregnancy centers 20 years ago now. Mm-hmm. That was my introduction to the pro-life movement. My wife got me into it. She was the pro-life director for the Archdiocese of Chicago. And I remember, you got these nice, big, thick manuals back when we still had paper things. There's a manual for all this sort of thing. So the pro-life movement has the resources, but you have to engage it. Mm-hmm. I will say, too, though, the thing that's changed in the pregnancy center movement, folks used to have the instinct, and maybe it was the instruction, keep your head down. Let the more activist side of the pro-life movement do the work and all that. Mm-hmm. Well, at this point, the state governments and local governments are coming after the pregnancy centers. Mm-hmm. And so really, you don't have the option of keeping your head down. Mm-hmm. And I've observed in talking, not just with pregnancy center directors, but also their boards of directors, their supporters, that the folks that are around the pregnancy center, so your community, they are much more apt to want you to fight. Mm-hmm. And to some extent, it's necessary. Mm-hmm. If you get sued, you're going to have to. Mm-hmm. But in some cases, there are places where a state might put a regulation in place and you go, well, maybe I can get around it. I could keep my head down. Maybe they won't come after me. But where centers are now saying, hey, I'd rather engage the fight first. I'd rather come forward now and not have to wait for the sword of Damocles to hit me. And so that's been a nice change. It's a different thing for pregnancy center folks, though, to be more active and out there on a controversial issue or basis like this.
Yeah, that's so right. When I've had the opportunity to speak to some of these folks, I tell them, you know, because you'll hear that. Well, we don't want to be involved in the fight. We want to lay low. I said, the fight's coming to you whether you want it or not. Yeah. And regardless of what color your state is, right, you might think, well, I'm nice and safe in a red state. But like we've seen in states like Pennsylvania and others, it's a razor-thin margin. And all it, you know, it can change with one election. And so don't assume that you're necessarily protected. As we think about some of these cases and things like that, you mentioned earlier the resources that can be spent fighting them. Obviously, the other side wants to win if they can, but do you think sometimes it's just about being an annoyance and obstructing what these pro-life organizations are trying to do?
Well, and you know, we can see this as more of a spiritual battle. You know, we're battling for the hearts, minds, and souls of everyone who is in the midst of an abortion decision or you know, faced with it potentially. But the other side may take a more political lens on the whole thing. And I will say, as an old politician, your job in politics is to take the other side's money, demoralize them. I mean, it's more of an attacking war type thing. And so when you look at what they're trying to do with us, yeah, they just want to tie us up and annoy us. Even if they know it's totally meritless, they still, you know, they get benefit out of taking resources away from us. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll say this, though, you know, two can play at that game. And certainly, you know, when we have opportunity to sue or we have some, you know, reason that we've been wronged or what have you, or when they even attack us, you know, these state attorneys general come after us. You know, most state attorneys general, when they come after a company under a deceptive practices claim, the company rolls over. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody fights back against the attorney general of the state of New York or the attorney general of the state of California. But with us, we are going to fight them at every single turn. And so that is a very different way of dealing with things. And the court systems aren't even necessarily used to that. You know, normally they're looking at dollars and cents and this, that, and the other. Well, we're looking at that as a moral fight. And so we will fight every little thing if it's appropriate, and obviously within the bounds of ethics and everything else, but we're not going to give them an inch. Mm-hmm. And so they then get to understand, well, if we are going to come after these pregnancy centers, if we are going to come after these sidewalk counselors, the pro-life movement, you better bring your lunch. It's going to be a long day. Mm-hmm. And you know, as much as, say, the state of New York, they sued Heartbeat and 12 centers, I mean, across that state. It's a big state, but a dozen centers across the state, from tiny little centers up to much larger. Well, when they sent out their notices of intent to sue, we decided to jump into court first. They thought we were going to be scared and back off and all this. We said, no, we are going to attack you head on, and we're going to go get into court. It turned out they wanted to sue our clients, Heartbeat and that dozen pregnancy centers. They wanted to sue them in Manhattan because they thought they'd get better treatment down in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Now, at the same time, you know, President Trump was embroiled in several legal controversies in Manhattan where there were some interesting rulings coming from at least the presiding judge over his case or the two over his cases. And so maybe, you know, maybe the attorney general was right that would be a better venue for her. But we sued in Rochester, New York, which is more centrally located. It's easier to get to. And it doesn't have all the, you know, all the political baggage of Manhattan. Well, you know, we sued. And I mean, the attorney general's office was just furious with us. And they couldn't believe that we would strike back and do anything like that to attack their narrative. Now, and of course, they tried to sue us in Manhattan, even though none of the pregnancy centers were in Manhattan. They had no offices there. There was no tie to Manhattan other than the AG thought that she'd get a better case there. So, but that whole dispute, we've tied them up in court for over a year just on that issue, just on that issue alone. So they know, hey, you're not going to beat us easily. And we think we're going to win that case eventually. But same time, you know, we're not giving them an inch. Mm-hmm.
I love that. That's great. I love to hear about that support that the pregnancy centers have. What can pro-life lawmakers do to help pregnancy centers and other pro-life organizations?
Well, I'll tell you, if you're in a red state, I think the first thing you've got to do is realize no one is losing their seat over a pro-life vote. Mm-hmm. In fact, right after Dobbs, things were really up in the air. And so I was privileged to be able to go to certain state houses and maybe advise legislators in those places and the local pro-life groups. And I would see just the fear in red state legislators. And you're sitting there going, your people, I came from Illinois where I've seen people, you know, this issue is very hot in a more blue state. But even here, you know, they were afraid for their lives. And I'm going, the only people losing their seats are folks that say they're pro-life that don't vote for pro-life.
Yep.
I mean, you're not losing your seat because you did more pro-life than maybe, you know, you thought you should. It also caused me to, you know, see too that, you know, there were some people that might have had a, you know, a pro-life label after their name, but they had just done it because, well, that's how I have to get elected here instead of actually believing in it. So that was a little bit disappointing. But, you know, both for red state lawmakers who are with us, hey, you know your colleagues. But for red state residents, hey, you know, push those legislators. They're not going to lose their seat for doing more pro-life. So try to be more creative and address these situations and push forward. Now, in the purple states, I would say this. You've got to know your audience, your state. But I mean, the people of these states, even if they will say, well, I'm more pro-choice than pro-life, they still don't want coerced abortion. They don't want taxpayer-funded abortion. They don't want kids being taken for abortions without their parents' permission. They don't want late-term abortion. There is so much room you have to push on this issue. And then in the blue states, you know, that's a tougher place. Your job there is to play defense, which often means embarrassing the other side when they overextend. So for instance, in Illinois, when they passed this terrible anti-speech law targeting in pregnancy centers and pro-life counselors, well, we had it set up perfectly where we had the right questions. So as the lawyers, we were able to help advise the legislators, get the right questions asked in committee, get the right floor debate going on to help support a later federal lawsuit we knew we were going to have to file. And so that all of that went, hey, even though you're losing, we knew we were going to win in the end because, or at least, you know, we were much better positioned to do it because we fought so hard and we're so organized and stuck together all the way through. So that was a great example in the Illinois 2023 situation. The whole movement was together, had all the witness slips going in. The pregnancy centers went in and testified. The legislators, the pro-life legislators, were all united and really, you know, really just did wonderful floor work and debate work and questioning in the committees. And that then allowed us as the lawyers to just destroy them once we got to the courtroom.
Peter, what would you say to those of us who are a little more skeptical? I mean, we're all familiar with the term activist judge, right? And then that's especially been in the news nowadays for different reasons. Who, you know, it's just some of us say, you know what? You can't, relying on the legal system to get it right is a risky gamble. Is there any way you can restore some of our faith in the judicial system?
Well, you know, the system, it often works. Sometimes it doesn't. So that this is the problem. I can guarantee you a way it won't work, and that's if we don't fight. And so that's part of our issue. I mean, we will. I mean, imagine it from your the perspective of a lawyer. I know walking into the courtroom, pretty much how I'm going to do on a pro-life case based on who appointed the judge. In a federal district court, it's unfortunate. It shouldn't be this way, but oftentimes I know. Or at the very least, I have an idea. You know, if it's a pure First Amendment issue, sometimes folks will, you know, they'll maybe, you know, if you have somebody that you might think the judge is more pro-abortion rights, on a pure First Amendment issue, maybe they'll come with us because it's just you sitting there go, why are we restricting people speaking on the sidewalk? But oftentimes we are able, even when we're unsuccessful in the trial court, we can win on appeal. And that's, I mean, again, we've had that, we've had great success there, but there are also times, I mean, unfortunately you do sometimes lose on appeal. Well, what does that do? That could generate a circuit split, then could go to the Supreme Court. So you always have these other avenues to fight. It's just, I would say this, the legal system is not supposed to work this way. What I was taught in law school, the whole basis of our system is neutral, unbiased judges who are supposed to be applying the law dispassionately. And that, we don't have that right now, at least in many, many venues. but I can show you that we've been able, even when we get a rough, tough, you know, go at the trial court, we've been able to get things reversed on appeal. We've been able to fix things long term. There are always ways around that. And so that's, you know, even in the, you know, the FACE Act litigation, well, okay, well, we lost those criminal cases, and it was tough. You know, when you got your folks, you know, those are the ones where the folks went into the abortion facilities and sat in peacefully and prayed. Well, I mean, you know, as a defense lawyer, you often would tell your client, you know, if you're going to do something like that, you may not want to live stream it to Facebook. It kind of makes the prosecutor's job a little easier. But the whole point of doing that sort of protest is to raise awareness, not to try to avoid a criminal charge. But at the same time, well, what happened with those folks? President Trump gets elected. What does he do? He pardons them all. So did we win in court there? No. Now, we had some great arguments on appeal, but we didn't need to use them because the president came in and he got that done. And if anything, that whole struggle, say, for instance, in a case where you know, I mean, look, your folks went into an abortion facility. They sat in front of the door. Now, they were perfectly peaceable, but they filmed themselves doing it. Yeah, you violated some law, it's trespass or what have you. But even there, what did they do? They triggered congressional hearings. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole country was hearing about the weaponization of the Biden Justice Department and why, and it's showing the injustice of prosecuting these, you know, grandmas and peaceful people when we're getting firebombings at our other clients, at our pregnancy centers. I mean, millions of dollars in damage at pregnancy centers and pro-life churches. And so even though you don't necessarily win in court, boy, you make a good point. And you probably make a bigger point than a particular legal decision, one way or the other.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a helper. I'm hoping to give you a little more hope there that even the fight, if you engage it correctly and smartly, can give you a win, even if you're not winning in court.
That's a pretty engaging argument, counselor. I will take it under advisement as I consider my faith in the judicial system.
Well, can I tell you something too? You know, we're dealing with political actors on the other side.
Yeah.
And I use the example of COVID. You know, we had all these fights back and forth about trying to open up the churches. Mm-hmm. And in every state, it was a little bit different. You know, we eventually went to the Supreme Court and won there after Amy Coney Barrett was appointed. But the fight, let's say, again, I'm going back to Illinois only because we're based here and we do a lot of work here too. J.B. Pritzker, terrible governor, very much hostile to religious rights, hostile to life. We repeatedly sued him in both state court and federal court. And I'll tell you something, we never got to a decision, a final decision in any of those venues. But every time we sued him, we did a really good job of getting the media ginned up. You know, we kind of got to, you know, we're pretty good at it, get the people ginned up and everything else. Well, every time we would sue him, he would roll back his restrictions a little bit on the churches. And then we'd get all the media out there because, you know, they were looking for a story because everybody's shut in their homes. I'm like, what are you going to cover? You know, and then we'd sue him again and then he'd pull them back a little more. And then we sued him a third time. And on the eve of a temporary restraining order hearing, he wiped away those restrictions. Mm. And that was in May of 2020. So he did it well earlier than some of the other states did. But we never once won a legal hearing on that. But it was so you can use the, you know, these legal proceedings in ways to help maybe force people to do what they should be doing, even just out of the fear of the proceeding. I don't know. So that's again another point.
Makes
just yeah, it's part of an overall strategy to try to drive forward, you know, the culture of life and you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's great. As you kind of survey the pro-life landscape, you look at the different cases that have been brought up, do you see anything that the pro-life movement, maybe we should think about that. We should tighten that up or we should, you know, really make sure we're above board here. Is there anything you see that the movement just should be aware of or should maybe be thinking about differently to help avoid or better fight some of these cases?
Well, I'll say this. I think the big fight that we have, there are a lot of, there are new landscapes. So we still, as a movement, I think, you know, we're still tied to, I mean, look, we were there for 50 years almost mm-hmm. under Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm. And so there is still that mindset in a lot of folks' minds that you know, that's still in place somehow. Mm-hmm. And it really isn't. You know, instead, you know, we have to do different things in different places. But one place I'd love to see us do a bit more work is looking at the direct democracy states, because every time this question is being put to a populace, mm-hmm. where they don't have an alternative, where they just say, do you want full abortion or no abortion, mm-hmm. they're choosing full abortion, mm-hmm. that maybe we look at it and go, is that really the choice we want folks to make? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. in Nebraska, where we were very integral in helping with the initiatives, we had a pro-life initiative mm-hmm. next to the full abortion initiative. Mm-hmm. And what did the people in Nebraska do? They chose the pro-life initiative, mm-hmm. but it was not a... It was worded very carefully. It was a little more, it sounded a little more moderate in its tone, and it was appropriate. But even, you know, in states like Ohio and Michigan, state like Missouri, I mean, for heaven's sakes, Missouri being a full abortion state with worse abortion laws than Illinois, right. where all the folks in Missouri go to get their abortions, or, you know, or they go to Kansas, that makes no sense. So to me, you've got opportunities, but we have to be a little more creative in giving people alternatives that they can embrace, you know, so things again like what we had talked about, you know, late term abortion bans, stopping this funding of abortion by taxpayers, you know, protecting parents' rights. Mm-hmm. I've seen folks put things together where you deal with the transgender issue and abortion. Mm-hmm. Well, that's very popular in part because the folks are really worked up about the transgender issue. In fact, recently, you know, Planned Parenthood. What have folks realized about Planned Parenthood? They're doing transgender hormones. Mm-hmm. And that might have that's got a segment of the American population more angry than all the yep. abortion stuff they do. Mm-hmm. And so look, let's be creative. Let's use those tools we have. I mean, they're it's appropriate. And so that to me is maybe where we want to go, you know, and there are other issues too. You know, I look at a state like Missouri. So we have lawyers based there. A lot of presence there. We were very involved. We actually got the initiative knocked off the ballot mm-hmm. before then the Supreme Court flipped mm-hmm. and 4-3 mm-hmm. put it back on the ballot. Mm-hmm. But even that state, folks may not remember, pre-Dobbs, they weren't doing abortions in Missouri. So mm-hmm. under Roe, they weren't doing abortions in Missouri. Right. Well, if you have an ostensibly pro-life state where you're still doing abortions, well, first off, you don't even have Roe and Casey in place anymore. But Missouri was able to end abortions even with those in place. Well, why can't your state do that? Mm-hmm. Maybe you're not, you know, maybe there's some things you could do to help get that done. And so that, you know, I think that's really where you start looking for things. I would say this, we've just got to abandon magic bullet thinking or this, you know, the world is not ending. Everything's not going to get fixed in one fell swoop like it's a Hallmark special. I mean, you know, this is our new reality. It's what we wanted. It's what we've been fighting for. We've got to now go forward and embrace it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense. I think one of the problems, though, with what you said is we got to be careful when we cite Missouri solutions. People from Missouri are smarter than everybody else, and so, you know, we just don't want to have false expectations.
Well, they're smarter, except... We had a little problem.
Come on, Peter.
You
and your facts.
I got to tell you something. No, but Scott, I mean, you have some of the smartest lawyers in the country coming out of Missouri, and I've got a couple of them that work for me, which I'm very privileged for. But the Missouri issue, it is reflective of what's happening in some other states. For instance, in Nebraska, we had a pro-life alternative amendment. There were some pro-life individuals and groups. They didn't like the language, said it wasn't pure enough.
Right.
So they went against it. And you're sitting there going, folks, you're looking at 100% abortion yes. mm-hmm. to the moment of birth and beyond.
Yes.
Or this, where you have the full ability to regulate abortion at your legislature. Yeah. Why are you fighting this?
Yes, and so frustrating.
It is. And so there has to be, I think for folks, so when I look at, you know, our role in the movement as Thomas More, I mean, we're not... you know, I don't have an activist group. I don't have folks we send out walking and knocking on doors and all that. We're lawyers. We're here to help the pro-life movement think through some of these issues, maybe help folks to, you know, develop things like that. We're here to sue or defend if we get into court. And so from that role, I just look at it and go, you know, let's think about how to do this better, because I don't think it's rocket science. I think the solutions are out there. I think they're not too far away from us. And so I have great hope going forward that we will be able to fix some of these issues. But yeah, we've got to work on those things. You know, when we have fights inside the movement, I mean, I got to tell you, I always say, you know, you can have fights inside the movement, but when we go to the public, we have got to be united. Mm-hmm. I learned that in my legislative time. You know, I had folks that were to the right of me. Now, I represented a pretty moderate suburban constituency. I am not a moderate guy in my nature. I'm pretty conservative politically. But I had folks that were to the right of me, and we would sometimes, we'd get after each other behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. But once we got out into the public, there was no space between us. I mean, we were in lockstep. And so that, I think that's a lesson we could take within the movement, just as we work, you know, to convince and shape the public mind to embrace a culture of life.
Yeah. So as we wrap things up, you know, one of the things that always amazes me about your group is you're totally supported by donors. Is that correct? I mean, that's, you talked about the resources necessary. That's a tall ask.
It is. It is. So what we do is essentially, you know, we have the strangest law practice out there. We're lawyers whose clients don't pay them. And that's our model. And so that, you know, I scour the country trying to find the best lawyers available. And we have some real aces. So they are folks that maybe they've left big law firm life. You know, they didn't want to go into the, you know, the kind of crazy grind that, you know, the liberal law firms have. And so I'm able to pull this team together, pay them less than they're worth, but all because we've got generous donors who will support mm-hmm. us. And I'll tell you guys, it's always tough when a Republican comes into the White House, but it's been doubly difficult because of President Trump, because he is, I know he kind of backed off on the pro-life thing, but he's been doing so much. Folks think, everything's fine.
Yeah.
You know, isn't everything fine? Don't you know? You guys don't really have anything to do. Well, my goodness, we've actually got more to do because all the other folks are coming after us, and so that is something we are continually trying to, you know, educate our donors on and tell them about. But yeah, that is the fight. Is you know, get the best lawyers, pay them so they can at least live. You know, but they're doing it at great sacrifice. And I've got guys. I mean, Harvard and Yale. So I mean, they could be making 3, 4, 5 times as much money as I can pay them. But they are committed to the cause. We just need enough funding to keep it going.
Thomas More Society, it's M-O-R-E, thomasmoresociety.org is the website if you want to learn more about resources available, or if you want to support these guys, men and women who are fighting this fight. Man, it's so important. Yeah, let's not fall into the trap. I don't care what the color of your state is. I don't care who's in office on the federal level. The fight is there, and we need these folks working on our behalf. Peter, we really appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us here today.
I appreciate it, guys.